right now. Just get the recording started. And great. And today I'll be talking with George Lane. George and I have been working together on Online for Offline. We met, what was it, October at Perry Marshall's event?
I think it was October last year, yeah.
Yeah, it was last October. That's great. And we started talking about a bunch of the things that we did that were similar. Obviously, we're at the same event. So we started working together on Online for Offline and got a nice little product started there. And it was just kind of, I like this opportunity to introduce you a little bit more to some of the people, because as we talked more and got to know each other a little bit more, it was very interesting to me, your background and how you came to become a marketing consultant, especially where you started. So could you just go ahead and talk a little bit about where you started, and just kind of, I might hit you with some questions along the way, but let's just talk about how you got your introduction into the marketing and where you started, because you started using it for your own business. So let's start there.
Yeah, I did. Well, the whole marketing thing was just was a necessity more than anything else. It was a bit of a kind of a baptism of fire. I started off in the plumbing business ages ago now, and I started off as an apprentice, and I've always had that thing with authority and having a boss and that kind of thing. And so as soon as I qualified, I left my company and set up as a plumber and heating engineer by myself. And that worked really well. Didn't have any experience of marketing or business or anything. I was just, you know, the guy in the van going around and doing a few jobs here and there. And things got really busy just through viral kind of word of mouth stuff, really. And I was looking at expanding. I took on a partner, and it was like, okay, well, there's a market out here for good heating engineers. There was a real scarcity of these sorts of guys at the time in the UK. And we decided to actually take it a bit seriously and build a business. And that's where the marketing came in. It's like, well, where do we start? And we started with sort of most businesses who plan to expand start with advertising in their local papers and the yellow pages and directories. About £10,000 later, we realized it didn't work.
You'll be told that the phone books work by all the phone book guys. They don't work nearly as good as they used to.
No, I think they told us to expect 700 calls a month. I think we got about two. So yeah, that was a rude awakening, and I was like, shit, you know, I'm like, we've done all this money, and we need some business now, you know, to just pay for the ad to start with. And so I just started to read up. I heard about Google AdWords, and this was back in like 04, 05. It was just when AdWords was just getting off the ground.
Wow.
Yeah, and I sort of got started with that. And again, just got burned completely, didn't know what the hell I was doing with it.
I have no idea what you're talking about. That's never happened to me.
Yeah. I'm sure it's happened to most people who are listening.
Yeah, I'm sure everybody that's touched their toe in there without really knowing what they're doing is, I went through, somebody I know went through, blew through $600 in clicks in about a month with three sales, and like, it was really, really ugly. That's what I heard. Of course, that wasn't me. That was somebody I heard about. Okay, George, go ahead.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because a similar thing happened to me with AdWords. I lost about £200 in 2 days on it to start with. And I was like, right, okay, let's just pause everything here, work out what's going on. And I started to learn from a guy in the UK called Chris, and we picked up a few strategies here and there and just kind of stumbled through. But I think the biggest breakthrough I had with online marketing was the permission marketing thing. So it's where I tied AdWords, opt-in pages, which we can talk about in depth a bit later on, email marketing, free reports, and all that kind of thing, and actually building a relationship with our email subscribers at the time. led on to some fantastic breakthroughs in our business.
Great.
Yeah.
Tell us, let's talk a little bit about that first experiment, that first time that you just kind of set up this sales funnel.
How did the first time with an opt-in page and everything and all that?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's quite a funny story because I wrote the page in a Word document and I had no experience of any web design or anything like that. But I managed to sign up and get an AWeber account. And I sort of worked out how to get a form generated. And I sent this sales copy over to our web designers at the time with the HTML code for the opt-in form and all that. Mm-hmm. And they just looked at it and they said, why do you want to do this? You know, because I said, don't put any links on the page. I said, just put this and our logo and the headline and the offer and everything else. And they're like, are you sure you want to do this? I said, look, don't do it. This is never going to work. And I was like, no, look, please just try it. You know, just please just humour me with this one, all right? And they stuck it up for me. And I think straight out the gate, I think we got about 15% opt-in rate for our market, which was the plumbing and heating market. And I started to write a few follow-up emails. I didn't really know what I was doing. I didn't have any experience of influencer or copywriting at the time. And our subscribers loved it. You know, they fired back questions and, you know, it was just fantastic to see things take off. We were getting, from those people who opted in to our email list, about 16-17% of them were actually turning into customers. So our marketing process, our entire sales funnel was just getting really efficient. And I learned a bit about testing and measuring stuff, learned a bit more about AdWords, and just got things that just a bit more kind of refined, really. And that's what built our business, was a half-decent AdWords campaign back then, a single web page, and some email follow-ups. And that was basically our formula.
How big did your business grow? I mean, it sounded like you had some growing pains along the way talking to you about that.
Yeah, we did. Well, the problem was that before we hit on the AdWords thing, we were really struggling. We were good heating engineers, you know, we did good work, but that just isn't enough for growth. It's okay to just tick over on. But if you've got staff and wages to pay or plans for expansion, it's really tough. And so, it's funny. It only takes one strategy or one thing to really hit, and then you start to grow. And our growth was very quick for like a brick and mortar business. I mean, I've seen growth a lot faster on the internet, but we doubled in the space of a year. And that probably would have been a lot bigger because the problems we had in our area in the plumbing and heating market is that it's damn hard to find good plumbers and heating engineers, even if you're in the trade, because the really good guys are doing it for themselves anyway, and you can't get them. And the bad ones are willing to work for you, but they're just absolutely atrocious and you never employ them. So we kind of got around that, and we thought, well, there's all this business coming in, there's all this work being generated. How can we handle it? So we just prepped our prices up. And in the space of that year, we actually doubled our prices as well. Twice as expensive as our competition, yeah. And the good thing was, through our email marketing and how we positioned ourselves as experts in our field, which both of us were, you know, we both, you know, really knew our stuff, but we kind of told people that, and kind of, we were the area and industry leaders. They would pay a premium for us to do the work for them. So, yeah, it was great, you know, and it actually pre-qualified customers so much. When they phoned up or when they emailed back or when we actually came around to quote them, they were just so ready to buy. There was hardly any selling involved. It was just a case of going around there and taking a few measurements, just having a chat with them. And there was no real closing process, you know. I mean, I'm not a great salesman. I'm always trying to improve, but I'm never that good at it. So, but even then it was quite easy. I mean, we'd close 1 in 3 quotes anyway, just turning up, taking measurements, typing a quote and posting it. So, it worked really well. And said we weren't really competing on price or with anybody else either.
How would that compare to the industry quote wise? That seems ridiculously high. But I mean, really, really good closing rate from quote to close. What would you say? Is it like normally 1 in 6, 1 in 7, 1 in 10? For another company going into that same situation?
It depends on the company.
Yeah.
It depends on the source of the referral, but I'd probably say maybe 1 in 5, 1 in 6. But bear in mind that they're going to be basing it all on price, and they're only be getting half the money we'll be getting as well.
Right. Yeah. That's awesome.
You know, and so they were all going in on price. And then we completely outpositioned ourselves from that.
That's great. And you got a lot of press over the way you guys grew your business as well, from what I remember talking to you about.
We did okay with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because being online and just this kind of strategy, and especially being on Google, can attract journalists and stuff as well, just as a side effect. You know, it's quite nice. We had I featured in The Independent, I think. It was like a plumber's makeover thing in London that got published. We won a couple of business awards. We were featured on TV, on ITV in the UK, on home improvement program and all that. So, yeah, and it's quite nice. It sort of has this sort of big effect on your business. It just kind of ripples out to all other areas and just strengthens the entire business once it's a good core marketing strategy.
Wow, that's great. Now let's talk about when you decided it was time to get out. Now, was this whole Notting Hill incident part of the reason why you decided it was time to get out of doing the work?
No, the Notting Hill incident. Do you really want me to talk?
I don't think I really want to hear it. Let's talk about when you're transitioning out of the when you decided to transition out of the industry into a cleaner industry.
Well, I wasn't transitioning out of the industry. That was when I that was back at the time I was an apprentice in London,
and we were doing a lot of
plumbing, and that was just a moment I thought, I don't want to do plumbing anymore. I just want to do heating and just work on boilers, because at that time it was I'm going to try and make it sound as nice as possible. Well, we were in a really nice house in Notting Hill, and the customer had some drainage problems, had some funny smells. So she went out for the day, and we lifted the drain cover in the kitchen with those big square manhole covers, and it was packed. It was packed right up to the very top. And the depth of this drain was about 8 foot, and it was packed. Yeah.
Oh, man.
With about the first 2 foot of solids and the rest of liquids. And we had to dig that out with, we had a pair of surgical gloves each. We just had a normal work clothes. We had a roll of, like, plastic bags, so those big, thick builder's bags, and
I
a trowel.
That's enough.
And a trowel. And that's when I made the transition, and that's when I thought, no, it's time to do heating. So then that's the whole Notting Hill incident, just for the record.
Wow. So, all right, well, let's talk about transitioning from heating to marketing.
Yeah.
You would go from what, cleaner to cleaner.
That was more pleasant.
Yeah.
It was much more pleasant, and there wasn't sort of a big smelly moment like that. That was more of a natural transition for me. People saw our business grow, and just through the groups I was in and friends, my contacts, people started asking me to do it. And I first got approached, actually, I was at a seminar, and the guy actually found me and emailed me after this seminar. And he ran he still does run a big scaffold company, a guy called Danny. And he said, any chance of applying this to our business? I said, yeah, well, sure, you know, we'll give it a try. And I didn't even charge him for it, you know. He said, well, just, like, it's a bit of fun, it's an experiment, you know, because I just love doing this sort of thing and seeing these kind of results, and it was great, you know. I think he pulled a few good deals from it. I mean, the average contract value for his sort of business is around about, I don't know, probably about £300,000, $600,000.
Wow.
So for spending like £1,000 a month on AdWords, he's done very well out of it.
So yeah, and that's when those jobs.
No, very, very high ticket stuff. He does about $20 million a year, this guy. And so I thought, right, okay, this isn't a fluke. Let's try it on a few other people's businesses. And I thought, well, I can do the plumbing thing, but it's hard to get staff. I don't really want to be doing, like, you know, heavy labour all my life. I don't really enjoy it that much. I never really enjoyed it. I really just kind of fell into it, you know. I thought, well, yeah, let's try this whole marketing thing. And it's just grown and grown and grown, you know. And then in the process, I mean, as I first started out, you know, I learned a hell of a lot from people. Guys like Perry and Howie Jacobson. And just actually gradually and slowly learning the sort of how AdWords really, really works. And it's very hard to really teach that to someone unless they just sit and manage loads of accounts. I mean, I think I manage at the moment, I must be managing about 20 accounts. And I think I worked it out. In the last year, I've managed about $340,000 worth of clicks. So when you're doing that kind of management, it does give you an idea of what works and what doesn't as well. Even the big guys can't tell him, even guys like Perry and like these AdWords gurus, they can generalize, but yeah, it's funny, you know, you just get a feel for things and how they work. But yeah, that's how I did it, you know, that's how I transitioned through.
Yeah, there's no substitute for hands-on working with it. I mean, you can, the books will tell you a lot and it'll give you some good strategies to work from. But there really is no substitute to hands-on doing it, just in any activity
no.
at all.
No, those clicks, it's the speed as well. It's the speed of testing, you know. And if you've got 10, 20,000 clicks going through your fingers every month, and it's quite easy to work out, you know, what works and what doesn't.
Well, let's talk about some of... we've talked about your transition a little bit. Any other details you want to talk about on your transition before we kind of move on?
No, it's fairly straightforward, to be honest.
what would you say, what was your thinking, let's just touch back on this a little bit, what would you say was the key ingredient to the success you had through AdWords, even just in, let's start within in the beginning, and then we'll ask if it's changed from the beginning to today. What would you say was your key success right out of the gate?
Well, I don't think that the key was AdWords, because those first attempts, although we pulled a lot of business in from it, weren't that refined at all. They were very ham-fisted attempts, and with kind of the kind of knowledge I've got now, I could absolutely kill it in AdWords and just, I don't know, improve things 300-400%. But I think the key to our success, our first attempts in online marketing, was more about our strategy and our positioning. We talk about this in a few videos in online for offline. I'm not sure if we published them, but it talks about the power of the free report. And it's not just a case of just giving someone something of value so they think you're good at your job or you're in a position of authority. It's a bit more than that. Going back over our first pieces of marketing, our first free reports, it was very much, it's what Frank Kern calls an us versus them story, and I didn't even know we were doing it at the time. But we actually positioned ourselves above our competition by telling our prospects all the dodgy and sharp practices heating and plumbing companies do get up to. So we just kind of put a halo around this immediately, saying, well, because our company is exposing all of this, we were implying that we're kind of above that and we don't do that. And that was true, you know, we didn't do it. And I think that's what really clinched it. Our strategy put us over and above our competition, and our free report did as well. It sort of subtly undermined them without, you know, being nasty or libelous or whatever. And
so that'd be a key takeaway for people today too, is that you know, positioning yourself as the authority by pointing out what other people in your industry do that are shady or underhanded, or, you know, maybe there's nothing quite that obvious in your industry, but there's always something in an industry that you can point out to your new customers that can paint you in the right light. Obviously, you don't lie,
but there's always something that you can.
I mean, that's something I do with a number of my clients as well, is have them find the points of differentiation, and that would be a key point for people to take away from this call today. Okay, sorry, George. And how have you refined that going towards today with what you're doing today? I know it's similar, but you've certainly improved upon what you've done.
Yeah, there's a bit more to it than that. I mean, it varies from market to market, and but it's very important to have a clear idea of where your business is, kind of relative to the competition. I generally say, if you're going to write any free reports as a kind of as a carrot to get people to opt into your follow-up emails, it has to be useful to them, and it has to answer a burning question or need. And I think a lot of offline businesses don't really get this. And I think this is the sort of overview of why this sort of strategy works so well. As in, there's a clash between how businesses market on the internet and what users and consumers use the internet for. Now, most businesses try and sell direct on the internet. They just put their stuff up there or just put their phone number up on quite a bad website and just say, okay, phone us if you're interested. You know, they don't add any value to the search on the search engines or whatever. And from the searcher's point of view, they are on the internet to do research and to find information. There are very few instances where people fire up their computer, go on the internet, and have their credit card in their hand, and they just want to go out and buy something. There's not that many people out there. Most people start their research for a purchase online, and the trick is to catch them at that research stage. And that's what most offline businesses don't do, and they don't give them any information. So I think the biggest takeaway and the biggest overall strategy is that most business owners don't know how much information or good, useful information they've got in their heads that they can translate into a report, a video, or an audio that their customers are going to find really useful. It could be a buyer's guide. It could be tips on choosing that type of professional. It could be things to avoid. You know, there's loads of stuff that they can do that's really going to separate them as an expert, and at the same time set the buying criteria for the customer. If you can catch them early enough, you can actually influence their buying criteria. And so when they do come to you, they have been kind of molded into your ideal customer and ideal prospect already, and they didn't even know it. It's a bit sneaky, but it does work.
Because through that process, you'll disqualify people as well. I mean, you can disqualify by, so whether it's through price or timing, or you explain it, they learn enough so that they know whether they're a right customer for you along the way.
Yeah.
Is the goal.
Yeah.
That's
very powerful.
Now, let's see, how should I ask this? Well, what industries have you used it in so far? I'm going to go a different direction with my questions. What industries have you tried this with? I know you've used quite a few different industries, but let's...
Blimey. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Hang, let me go through my client's folder.
I know you've done... it's worked for financial leads. I know it's worked in for plumbing and other contracting industries.
Mm-hmm. Hang on, let me just go through a few here. Will writing and probate.
Okay.
That works well. Quite a good sort of us versus them story. You know, the stuff that the solicitors and will writers won't tell you. That's quite a good one. It's worked in the industrial scaffolding market, and of all things. Where else has this worked? It's worked in property sales. It's worked in the recruitment industry, back pains, in the wedding industry, go-karting, paintball, printing, car tuning, entertainment agents, forex trading, tattoos, you know, the list goes on. You know, it's quite diverse. There are some exceptions to it. There are some markets and certain keywords where the whole education thing doesn't work, and you've got to know what they are. It's just when people just want to do something. I mean, I haven't applied this out of this list. I haven't applied this strategy to the go-karting market, for example, because that's just wham-bam. People looking for the go-kart tracks, they just want to book... They just want to book go-kart and have fun. They don't want to know the 7 shocking secrets that that go-kart track owners don't want you to know. It's not that sort of market. And like I was saying earlier, you just get an intuition for what works and what doesn't.
Right.
For people on the call, the general rule of thumb, I think, is that if it's any kind of a researched or an educated sale, this type of marketing strategy is essential.
Okay. Just to kind of cover for the go-kart, you used AdWords campaigns, but you weren't doing the education process. So it was just an AdWords campaign that sent them to a landing page where they could sign up or call or et cetera.
That was just one of those campaigns. It was just so simple and just brought in huge results. We basically set an AdWords campaign up, sent traffic to a single page. It had had a video, it had some bullet points, a headline, and a form with the name, phone number, and email address. And in the first month, that pulled in an extra 18,000 for the client. And they're set to add probably add about £200,000 to their bottom line this year.
That's awesome. I do remember you talking about those guys now. That's one where their business went up like 18% the first month or something like that.
The first month they doubled turnover, I think. Yeah, they doubled in the first month, I think. Yeah, and then it sort of just kind of dropped off a bit. Yeah.
Well, I think anybody that's listening would like to double their business in the first month. It'd be okay if it leveled out a little bit after that. Was that the one where the guy was complaining because he didn't have the time to call everybody back?
Yeah, his staff were complaining. Yeah, they had two sales guys who would take bookings and all that, and the sales guys were just moaning to him. They said, I think on average we generated between 280 and 300 leads a month for him. And then just on the phone all day, just following up, taking credit card numbers. Yeah, it's a nice problem to have, obviously.
That's great. That is great. That's not an industry you would think of. How about what else would you like to tell us about here? We can move to questions here in just a little bit. We're at half an hour right now, so.
Okay.
Any other pieces you'd like to talk about?
I just want to talk about highly competitive markets.
It seems as if
a lot of people... This is something I just want to get off my chest, really. it seems if a lot of people's goal on AdWords is to get cheap clicks, and a lot of people who market AdWords, like the coaches and the people who sell like these info products on AdWords, can't really advocate that because it's a good headline to have. It's nice to say get clicks for the 2 pence or a cent or whatever, but I think most people are just going in completely the wrong direction when they're after cheap clicks. I've seen enough keywords and been in enough cutthroat markets to know that high-priced keywords are high-priced for a damn good reason, and that's because they make people money. AdWords is an auction system, and so it isn't as if Google comes along and sort of says, well, this keyword's going to be $20, that one's going to be 5 cents. It's down to the market to make their mind up. And it seems a lot of people, including AdWords professionals, get quite scared in these sorts of markets when clicks enter double figures. And they really shouldn't be. The only time people should be concerned if they're going into an expensive market is if their sales process and sales funnel isn't tight enough and they're not converting these people. But there's a guy who's a client of mine, and he's in the financial leads business, which is highly competitive. It's actually cutthroat here in the UK. You're paying about £20 a click for the decent keywords. And he said to me, yeah, well, let's go for the, like, you know, the long tail stuff and go for stuff that's slightly relevant but not entirely relevant. And I was like, no, let's just hit these keywords head on and just beat this market. And yeah, it works. You know, we I got cost per lead down from £300 down to last check about £45 a lead. So yeah, we dropped that down. We dropped cost per lead actually, whilst we paid more for a click. And it's kind of counterintuitive, and people don't get this first time round generally. But you can actually make more money sometimes by paying more for a click, but just having a better sales process and conversion rate. I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, it does. It basically comes down to knowing your numbers. You need to not be concerned about the click price. You just need to understand your sales process, know your cost per lead, and understand you need to know your numbers.
Yeah.
If it's making money, do it. That's what they say. And that's a lot of people get lost in saving a nickel here and there, and don't focus on the right thing. That happens all the time in business. But so that's probably one of the things you educate your clients on as well, is the sales process and what their actual cost per lead ends up being.
Yeah, I mean, AdWords is only about a third of the whole marketing process, and you can have a fantastic AdWords campaign, but if your page isn't converting and turning into money for you, it's not worth doing. So it's a complete approach. I kind of simplify it down to input versus output. That's the best way to tell if a campaign is successful or not. I mean, everybody can look at click-through rates, conversions, and all that sort of stuff. And those metrics are important. But the main thing is input is your spend on AdWords or on other pay-per-click stuff or whatever. And output is your profits. And if it adds up and it makes sense, well, that's what really matters.
That is all. If it makes money, that is all that matters.
Yeah.
You know, and then you just work on making it. Yeah. And you make it better, so you make more money. That's what it's all about. Yeah, I can speak from experience. There's nothing more painful than sending a bunch of clicks to a page that does not convert. There's nothing more painful than that. But
we've all seen that.
But once you get that page converting, then it turns into a wonderful thing. And it's just a gift that keeps on giving. And that's how I refer to AdWords as a gift that keeps on giving. When you got a campaign set up right, it just goes and goes and goes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let's take a look at our questions here. One of the first ones had to be, what would this work in the mortgage for a mortgage broker? And I think we covered that. I mean, you've been working in financial leads markets, and mm-hmm. I'd assume mortgage broker leads are pretty expensive. Have you bumped against those?
I've sort of come up against remortgage leads, and this is quite an interesting question, because this comes down to keywords and the psychology behind the keywords.
Okay.
And I'm going to get a little bit deep here for a second, but what a keyword is the best representation a person can think of the thought and the need in their head. Okay, so yeah, you kind of have to take a look at a keyword and try and work out what that person is really trying to achieve.
Okay.
So with a mortgage broker, some keywords may be like action keywords. So if someone typed in get a mortgage now, or get mortgage fast, or even cheap mortgages, those kinds of keywords that indicate they want to take action quickly. You probably wouldn't need a full opt-in and education process going on there. You just need a good web page it's been well tested and a good layout that just drops people through a process and just turns them into a lead or a customer. It doesn't really need any more than that. But the more research-based keywords would definitely be a candidate for this whole educational process. And it doesn't have to be a free report. I mean, in that kind of business, people don't really even want information. I mean, the things that do very well in that kind of industry are comparison and review sites. So for a lot of mortgage brokers and people in this kind of industry, if they have on their main site, and I'm sure you've done this in other industries, Doug, as well, they have their kind of main standalone corporate site, and then they set up another website with a different domain name, and it's a review site of the seven top 10 brokers, you know, or like seven top mortgage deals or whatever it is, and just make sure your company's at the top of that list with a decent review, and the other six or whatever companies are your affiliate links, where you'll make money even if they go to a separate company. Mm-hmm. So
I have done that in other markets. I think we talked about that in October. I have
another
market
that's
right. I'm doing that in. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
But the principles are the same. Even on like a review site, you're still giving information. That's the key. You're starting off, or you're starting the sales process with decent info that person has been searching for. I think as Perry Marshall says, you answer the question inside the searcher's head. But that's the key, I think. You know, but I can't think of any market where a good internet marketing strategy wouldn't be beneficial. I think the only markets where it simply wouldn't work is if there aren't any searches on your keywords. And then I'd suggest other things, but I'd say about 95% of businesses this could work for.
Right. Probably the biggest indicator of whether it would work or not would be the margin. What margin do you have in your product? I mean, if you've got a really low margin product, it's going to be tough. It's going to make it tougher to make money with an AdWords campaign. So
although you generally, generally your margins of your market are reflected in the bid price. So if we take the financial leads, for example, if we take debt consolidation or debt management type keywords here, the margins for the people who take on these sorts of loans is absolutely huge. I mean, on the back end, it's like tens of thousands of dollars or whatever. So that's why the clicks are so expensive. And there are other markets where the clicks are really, really cheap. They're like 2 or 3 cents. And that's because they're not buying keywords and those margins are such a lot lower. So if your sales process is tight and you've got a good back end as well, margins aren't really a problem. I mean, even in really competitive markets, I mean, a lot of people break even on their first sale in AdWords and pay-per-click. So that's quite common practice now. People do something called a self-liquidator, don't they? We were talking about this a few weeks ago. Where some businesses almost have like a sacrificial product that they put up front just to cover their costs in AdWords. And they just look at that product as like a lead generated product, and then they can follow up with that buyer afterwards and get sales on the back end of it.
Some of the people might be more familiar with the term a loss leader. In retail, you'll see that a lot, where a grocery store will advertise a discount on milk or eggs or something that is obviously being sold below their cost, but they do that to get you into their store. That's the same concept that he's talking about with a AdWords having a self-liquidating offer or something you sell through AdWords that breaks even or even loses money, if as long as it brings customers in that have a better lifetime value.
Yeah. Yeah. Certainly.
For many people, that's a whole different paradigm, thinking about what the lifetime value of the customer is versus how much can I make off of this one sale.
Yeah.
That's probably a big
It's a big shift in mindset. I mean, I know all of us in these sorts of economic times are thinking about fast cash, and that's fine. But that has to be balanced with the long-term value of a customer as well, because that's where the big money is.
That's great. That is great. Mm. Well, we kind of touched on this one. Someone was asking what industries that one of us has worked in that it hasn't worked, that AdWords has not worked. Have you had any industries that was very difficult to break into with AdWords? I'll rephrase the question.
Yeah, the wheels market was quite a different. I mean, it was quite a difficult market. That was hard to crack. You know, we're doing okay, but you know, we're still trying to crack it. It's usually the tougher markets are the ones where there's different kinds of people searching on the same words.
Okay.
Like if someone wants to write a will, they could be all sorts of ages, incomes, areas, you know, and it's very hard to talk to them all on the same level. And if you're in a market like that, it pays to survey people. There's a great service called AskDatabase.com. And if you can just send traffic to a survey page and just offer them something cool in return, if they just give you their feedback and just ask them what they're searching for, you know, and what their goals are. That can give you a better idea. But yeah, there are some funny markets, I call them. There's some strange searches going on, and I think the key with that is to establish the kind of general overall wants of that market. And kind of where they are leaning towards. And if after surveying, sometimes in these kinds of markets that are a bit mixed up, you actually have to have about 2 to 3 different brands. You don't have to do it a great deal, but you know, that involves having 3 different websites, 3 different AdWords accounts, and bid on the same keywords, but have a different site that people get sent to match that kind of person. For example, in the wheels market, there's about 3 different types of searcher on the same keywords. The first is the person who just wants to just have the whole thing done for them. They go into their wheel writer's office and just go through it all, pay top money, and done. The second type of person is the person who wants to do the will themselves online, to actually get a form filled out online and do it quite cheaply and just get something banged out and sent in the post. And the third kind is the person that's just after information. about how to do it, or they're just doing their research. And so ideally in this market, I mean, we've yet to do this because I've been so busy, my clients been so busy as well, but that's the kind of thing that's going to really work, because each ad and each website, each landing page is going to answer each searcher in a slightly different way. That they're all going to be put into the same funnel in the end. They'll all turn out to be your customer in the end, but they just have to come in through different different means.
And that's definitely where you need to know your numbers, whether it makes sense to break out different pieces. That's where that's where you kind of look at the 80-20 rule, where you know where there's that 20% sweet spot, 20% of customers are making the most money. You need to focus on that and make sure that you're targeting them as much as possible, but not forgetting about the others, but focusing as much on that, and because that's where you can make 4 times, 10 times, 16 times as much money off of that group of people as you do from everybody else.
Exactly.
Let's see, we've got about 10 more minutes here. Let's look. I like that question. Let me go through. I should have been prepared with another question for you here. What was the easiest market to crack? That's kind of a good question. What was the easiest market to get into? Are any of them easy?
Easy. I think the easiest one so far has been the go-karting. That was just a breeze. It was because there were people on AdWords, but they didn't know what they were talking about. And the whole market was doing AdWords themselves, and they hadn't had anybody, they hadn't had any AdWords consultants who do a campaign in that industry yet. I don't think they have either. And it was just very, very easy. It's very easy. I mean, we're still holding click-through rates. I think the last time I checked, our average click-through rate is still about 12%. And so for people who know their numbers in AdWords, that's extraordinarily high. And we're still only paying pennies for a click. And that didn't really take a great deal of effort. I hope my client's not...
not on the car.
No. Still charging the same price. But
well, you're still doing the same amount of work.
Yeah, and got
massive results.
Always comes
down to results, right? Always comes down to results.
Exactly. It comes down to results. And it was just huge results. I mean, I was really ready to spend a lot of time on it. And I didn't have to. I mean, I was still always going and check it and split test. And we'd get bid prices down and do good maintenance. But the entry into that market was astonishingly easy. It was very, very easy.
So so if we're going to look at elements of an easy market, say, we'd look for number of searches in a market, and this is if we're looking at a market versus we have a client who has a market. But if we're looking at a market, elements of a market, be one that has a fairly high or at least a reasonable number of searches a day, and then when you go and look at the ads themselves, even though there might be 4, 5, 6, 8 ads, they're not very good.
Yeah, now we need to define good.
I was trying to decide how to define that. Want to give a quick definition of what the elements of a good ad? That'd be a good question.
Yeah, I'm a good ad.
8 minutes to go.
Very generally. just very generally, like just a few sentences. The headline does match the keyword almost exactly, or it should be an exact a match of the keyword.
Okay.
The headline, the first line of text, sorry, in the Google ad is usually a benefit.
Okay.
The second line is generally a feature or a call to action. And somewhere in those two lines of text, the search keyword is mentioned again if it can be squeezed in. The display website in the text ad should have a subdomain that mentions the keyword, so it'll be yoursite.com/keyword or widgets or whatever, or it'll be widgets.yoursite.com. And then when you click through on those ads, their landing page should be matched almost exactly to the search term. It shouldn't be going through to the homepage. If you click on a Google ad and it goes through to the website's homepage, you know usually you're dealing with amateurs. If it goes through to something highly relevant, you know you're dealing with people who've got some sort of experience with AdWords and pay-per-click. And that's about it for a good ad. Just very quickly, sometimes in slightly more competitive markets, and there are a few good ads, and you just want to identify like the top four or five to borrow or copy to get started.
That's, get ideas from.
Yeah, I didn't say copy.
Yes.
Is to type in the search phrase into Google and just put like a random string of letters and numbers, just on blog posts about it, and I call it the mashing the keyboard technique. So it's just type your search phrase and mash the keyboard with the palm of your hand, you know, and then hit search twice. It's important to hit search twice, because if you hit it once, there is an algorithm update in Google that actually shows your previous ads. But punch search twice, and that's going to show you all the ads that have got higher than 1% click-through rate and the ads that are performing well. So that's a little ninja strategy there, and that works really well if you're trying to enter a slightly competitive market. You know, it just shows you all the decent ads.
So you'd do that by using the mortgage broker example. You'd say, you know, mortgage, and you type in, you know, mortgage or mortgage broker. I guess you wouldn't be looking for, maybe you'd be looking for mortgage broker, but you type in mortgage broker, and then you just hit a bunch of random keystrokes.
Yep.
And then hit search, and then hit search again, and that would give you the ones that have a minimum of a 1% click-through rate.
Correct. Yep.
That's great. That's good to know. That's another great tip to take from this call.
What's your mate?
You know, I've got a couple more questions, but I want to talk about relevancy of campaigns, because I want to ask my question.
Yeah.
It's something I know, but it's something I want to share. You touched on it briefly, but, you know, the difference between a good campaign and a bad campaign on ridiculous ends is, you know, a bad campaign is going to be slapping them right to the front page. Someone's going to be looking for a yellow tie, and they're going to go to a store selling clothing, and it's going to just go to the main page, and they're going to have to search to try and find the yellow tie. I've even had times where I couldn't find the item that I clicked on the AdWords campaign when I went to the site. Got frustrated. Yeah. That's a bad campaign. A good campaign. Tell me about the elements of a good campaign from the AdWord and where you'd go from there, what you'd see on the landing page. You talked about it. Okay. Let's hear it again.
Yeah, we probably need to just kind of back up a bit, and it's got to be just not from the ad. It's got to be from the customer's thought and the customer's intention to start with. So if someone's typing in a search phrase, yellow tie, for example, that's obviously what they want. And if they can find it, and they'll buy it, it's just one of those keywords. So your ad has to talk exactly about yellow ties completely, you know. It will be in the headline of the ad, it will be in the text of the ad, it will be in the subdomain of the site that's shown on your ad, so it will be ties.com/yellow ties, you know. And then from that point onwards, from that click, it's got to be as obvious and as easy as possible to get that person to buy that yellow tie. So it's got to be, like the headline has got to be, find the best yellow ties, top 10 yellow ties. Here's a yellow tie, you know. It's got to be so obvious that the person doesn't have to think. And there's like a double benefit of this. The first is, because yours is the most easiest sales process compared to your competitors, even if you're a bit more expensive or whatever, there's a far greater chance of that person buying from your website, because you're just serving it all up on a platter for them. They don't have to do anything or think. The other benefit of this is that it's a great user experience, and that's what Google always likes, is to get people to enjoy using Google and to keep coming back because it's good for their business. And from a technical side, they judge it in something called a quality score. So if your ad is really relevant, so let's start with a Thai example. So if your ads were about yellow ties and you bidded on just the keyword yellow ties in that ad group and then sent them through to a really exact landing page about those yellow ties, you're going to have a great quality score and you'll be paying less for a click and be in a higher position than your competitors that don't know how to do that. So as an example, if there was somebody else bidding on the same keyword on these yellow ties and their ad said buy ties online or buy accessories online, even worse, they just talked in a very general sense, didn't have anything to do with these yellow ties in their ad, and then they sent the person who clicks on their ad through to the home page and just made them go to like 8 or 10 clicks to get to these yellow ties. Google would probably slap a high minimum bid price on these people, charge them more for a click and keep them a lot lower down on the search results. And, yeah, they just get massively penalised for it. So I think that's a real big takeaway for people that are using AdWords, is to keep it highly, highly relevant. Yeah. And it's a lot of work. And it's not easy. You know, it's a lot of work up front doing all this. But it does pay off.
Well, and that's where you got to understand your 80-20. Where you want to spend your time, because obviously you can't do that for absolutely every keyword that you have, but you do it for the ones that are making you the money. And that's in, you know, more and more, the top guys are saying to focus on a smaller set of keywords instead of a larger set, unless you're talking localization. Localization still works very, very well, especially in markets like plumbing. Very, very important. Services that are done locally, very important. Keep the relevancy there.
And they're still very cheap.
It's still very cheap. Yeah, localization is great. Well, because you're only competing with those that are local. And even if every plumber in town was on, you know, which they're not going to be, 90% of them are going to have horrible ads. 8% of them are 8 to 9% of them are going to have okay ads, but aren't going to have the sale funnel behind them. You're going to have very little competition.
Exactly.
We've got just a couple minutes left. Do you want to? What would you like to say in closing, George?
I can't really think.
Was that it? No, I mean, that was a great closing for you. I can close it if you want.
yeah, that's cool. Yeah, Doug, you go ahead, man.
Okay. Well. George gave a really good outline of how you would set up a campaign there. It was kind of fun hearing a little bit about his background and how he transitioned from being a plumber to a heating guy to a marketing guy. Really enjoyed learning that. I thought it was a great story that we wanted to share with everybody on our list. And now George and I, of course, we have Online for Offline. This isn't a sales pitch because we don't have anything for sale right now. But we do have a lot of great videos on the site, onlineforoffline.com. Please go check it out. And this is just the first in a series of audios, that we're going to be doing teleseminars. And next week, you get to hear a little bit about my background, done some interesting things. And George will be interviewing me next week. And after that, we're going to just be starting a weekly series of teleseminars with other people in the industry. And so please send us questions, send us an email. If there's specific aspects of online marketing that you're interested in, and we will track somebody down to answer those questions for you. And for those of you that jumped on the call a little bit late, we will have the recording available, and we'll sit on the website. We'll send an email out about it when we get it prepared. Should be in the next couple of days. This is Thursday, so definitely by Monday we'll have it up. So once again, thank you for being on the call. Thank you, George. It was fun harassing you a little bit and sharing with everybody on the call here.
And, thanks very much, Doug.
You're very welcome, and you and I will definitely be talking later, and everybody else, thanks for being on the call. Bye-bye.
Take care. All the best. Bye.